This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Alrighty, welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio, and a very, very special edition here of Reinvention Radio. Mary Goulet, how we doing?
Hello.
Mary Goulet, Richie Ote, what's up, baby?
Hey, how's it going?
And it's really, really good. And if you're joining us on Reinvention Radio here for the very first time, then welcome, and you are in for a very, very special treat, because we are joined in studio, in our San Diego studio, by the one, the only, Miguel Ruiz Jr. How are you, my friend?
Pretty good, Steve. How are you doing? How's everything?
Oh, man. Doing? Yeah, really, really, really good. So let me just get something out of the way first, which is when you publish a book or when your dad publishes a book, you always have the Don in front of it. So what does Don – because we wouldn't call you Don Miguel, right? So what does – so for those who don't –
my wife doesn't call me
Don. Your wife doesn't call you Don Miguel either.
Yeah,
no.
She calls me Miguel.
So. Right. So what does the Don mean? I just want to make sure that I'm clear on that.
To me, it's the equivalent of a sir. Kind of like that kind of thing. Sir,
okay.
Paul McCartney, whatever. But it's given as a form of, endearment or of kind of like in a community where you have someone reach a certain level of stage. Now, it's usually given to someone of an older age. You know, my father definitely fits that.
Is that
and my
like
grandfather.
The next level, like it goes to usted, Don?
Yeah.
Don,
usually called, like for example, my mom, people would call her Doña Coco, or my father would call him Don Miguel. So in the Toltec tradition, you know, they give them to the people who are practicing the tradition. You reach a certain stage of awareness, or it's kind of like a black belt in karate,
kind of
thing.
Yeah.
At least that's how I've seen it. You know, of course, when I go to Mexico, people have a very hard time calling me Don Miguel because
right,
I'm young.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, it was strange for me because I was like, well, I'm looking at my age. When the book came came published, and I was 37 years old, 38, and I told him, "Do you really want me to have the Don? Because like I'm not in the in the culture, Mexican culture, I'm not there yet as an age. But in the practice of what I do and teaching and everything, I have reached that point. So they're like, nope, it's you're that doing it.
Yeah,
all right."
Hence reinventing family traditions.
Yes.
Hence reinventing family
traditions.
Exactly. Exactly. So for those who are unfamiliar, I mean, your family started, well, your dad obviously started with a book that has, well, I guess we could just call it, I mean, it's a classic at this point, right? I mean, there are books out there that are certainly among the most popular ever and go into that category of being a classic. And The Four Agreements is definitely one of those books that will live on certainly in lifetimes beyond any of us, for sure, right? So did you have difficulty living into that, knowing that you had, I mean, because come on, I mean, that's a lot of pressure, right? I mean, how you're the son who now have your, I mean, you've got what, four books or five books? How many books do you have of your own?
Four.
Four, right. So you've got your own. But so, I mean, Jesus, trying to follow up the Four Agreements, that's got to be a lot of pressure as a son.
Yeah, I remember that pressure when I was younger. But I guess the thing that eases it is that, you know, some people say that I'm following in my father's footsteps. But in reality, both him and I are following in my grandmother's footsteps. It's her dream. We're both him, my father and I, my brother, Don Jose Luis Ruiz, are following a tradition that my grandmother decided to share with a community. Actually, she opened up a little small spiritual temple in Barrio Logan on Logan Avenue back in the late 1960s, early 70s.
Wow.
And there she began to practice the tradition in her own unique way. She was a faith healer. She gave sermons and lectures on Thursday nights and Friday nights. So there, she opened up that tradition. And eventually, in 2007, she was inducted in the San Diego Women's Hall of Fame for keeping the tradition alive. Her father and her grandfather taught this as well, but you know, those were different times. They only taught it to certain family members or a few other people. But my grandmother had this wonderful dream to share that with the community. So when my father came along and he had this aha moment and went through the process, he was neurosurgeon when I was young. And then he went through this process. He let go of the medical profession. He began a teacher. And I was there. I witnessed that process as being the eldest. I got to see that. And I saw how he little by little just built himself well. And people used to say that he was walking in my grandmother's footsteps and all that kind of thing. And then the Four Agreements comes out. And, you know, the first year I didn't see it anywhere. And then it slowly became what it was. But when I first read it, it was I read three chapters. I put it down because it was my dad telling me what to do all over again.
Yeah.
So for me, there was that part.
It's like you didn't need to see it on the written word on, exactly. The, on the page there. It's like, Dad, I know this is what you tell me every day.
So for me, it's like it. There was the pressure of there's the people around us that has the pressure, but it was such a it was such a normal thing in my family to teach this, you know, that that we shared. Actually, I was wanted to show you that this is the picture of all my ancestors.
There's,
I don't know, people in the radio kind of hear it, but or see it. But
is it like four generations?
Oh wow!
Of, yeah, and then you would be the fifth generation because your father is on the right side of those pictures.
Yes.
So from an ancestral standpoint, all of your, well, your grandparent, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather, they were all teachers of this Toltec. I mean, and for those who don't know, what exactly is then Toltec wisdom? And I'm pronouncing it the right way?
Yes, you're correct. Yeah, okay. Yes. Well, the Toltec tradition is the word Toltec is a Nahuatl word that in English means artist or artisan. If I translate the phrase, the Toltec art of transformation, into 100% English, it means the artist path of transformation. I'm an artist, and the canvas for my work of art is my life. Mm. And the instruments I'm going to use to create that work of art, it's this body, it's this mind, it's the intent that animates both my body and my mind. Mm-hmm. So you can say that that in itself is the essence of the tradition, to become that I am the artist of my own life, and I can paint the most perfect nightmare or the most harmonic dreams. So each of my ancestors taught in their own unique way. My grandmother used to tell my brother Jose, if you practice the Toltec tradition the way I did it or the way your father did it, then you're destroying the tradition. You practice it in your own way because life is the teacher. You can say that in my apprenticeship, my grandmother taught me. She was my main teacher, then my father. But they were both preparing me for my big teacher, which is life. Life teaches us through the experience. It's the thing that makes something you read in a text something palatable or something that's relative in my life, because I get to apply it in my life. And life is the one that shows me how it affects me, how it applies to me, and how I can learn from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, I could go on here for this whole interview. I don't want to hog this whole thing. So, Mary or Rich, do you want to jump in? Or I've got a ton of questions.
I got a million questions to you. Just one quick one, because we covered it in a slightly different fashion. Steve was asking earlier about spirituality and God, because Mary has a show, Soulful Sunday, that we do here too, right before. And he was kind of wondering, like, what really happens, say, like, when he dies? He thinks it just goes black, right?
That's my opinion, that when you die, it just kind of all goes black. And, like, it's it, we're done.
Yeah. And one of the questions he asked was, why do things happen, things happen to people if there's a God, right? And people ask those questions all the time. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to get into the God part, but in the Toltec religion, keeping that in mind, when life happens, like you're saying, like, how does the Toltec religion look at those challenges? How do they see it? Is smiling, welcoming challenges? Because that's just going to help you grow. Like, what's the philosophy with the challenge?
Well, one of the things that I usually teach my apprentices or students, you can say, is that personal transformation would be so easy if we were robots devoid of any emotion. It would the only thing we would need is logic. That's it. But we're not robots. We are human beings with a full spectrum of emotions that we feel every experience, from happiness to joy, from anger to depression to bliss. You know, we experience everything in between. And life teaches us moments or brings moments that are going to trigger us in any of those directions. So it's up to us how we can engage it. It's what I was talking before, is that I can paint the most perfect, harmonious dream, or I can paint the most perfect nightmare. And it all depends on what I'm attracted to, what I'm engaging to, because I can tell a story or I can tell an event and I can tell a story about that event and I can paint it in the most negative way. I can find injustice anywhere, or I can find the possibility, or I can find the beauty, or I can find anything. From one event, you can tell 1,000 stories. Mm-hmm. So as my father, what our tradition calls a mitote, 1,000 voices all talking at the same time, all trying to hook your attention. And the one that hooks your attention is the one you're going to tell the story to. Mm-hmm. Now, for example, imagine that you're in a mirror room. Imagine that every one of these walls is a mirror reflecting us. And you see an infinite amount of you reflected around you. Mm-hmm. Now, out of all those billion possibilities, because you can see billions, you know, eventually, even though it gets dark the further out, mm-hmm. there's still an infinite amount of you.
Sure.
There's only one that's going to look back at you. And that's the one you give your attention to. Mm-hmm. So life is where you focus your attention. Because what your attention is going to teach you is, one, what actions you're not going to take, what decisions you're going to engage it from engaging it. That's the thing. How do you engage that moment in time? Mm-hmm. It could be the most turbulent times. For example, I went to school just down the street from here, from UCSD.
Yeah.
Midterms, they were tough times. Now,
let's do this, though. It's okay. We're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio, and a lot more to cover. And, man, you've got all your books and the Four Agreements itself. So much to talk about here with Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. on Reinvention Radio. More right after this.
Attention, coaches, authors, speakers, and business owners. Please pay close attention to what I'm about to say if you want to secure massive visibility fast and generate thousands of highly qualified leads without spending a dime on advertising or marketing. The easiest way to make this happen is to appear as a guest on the world's most popular podcast. We recently came across an awesome resource that provides detailed contact information for 240 new media influencers who are looking for guests just like you. It's called the Ultimate Directory, and for a limited time, you can get the preview edition of the directory absolutely free. That's right, for free. It's time for you to get the visibility you and your business deserve and connect with the world's leading icons of influence who can make you famous with the push of a button. Get your free preview edition of the Ultimate Directory right now at www.myultimatedirectory.com. That's myultimatedirectory.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
All right, welcome back to a very special edition here of Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulsher with the lovely Mary Gole.
Hello.
Mary, Richie Ote. What's up, baby?
Hello.
And we got the one and only Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., or should I just call you Miguel? What's up, Mikey?
What's up, man? How you doing?
All right, all good.
That's cool.
Yeah, man. All right, so look, before the break, I just don't want to leave people hanging here, right? Yeah. I know we were talking about that on the break, but I don't want to leave people hanging. So you were talking a little bit about just kind of your days at UCSD and UCSD mm-hmm. just being right down the road here. Just finish up that thought, and then we'll jump into...
Well, and correlating that with how does life teach us in the Toltec tradition is that the experience of going through those hurdles, those traumatic moments or complicated moments teaches us more about who we are rather than what's in a book. You know, yes, mm-hmm. we are studying, we're cramming, we've got that deadline, and sometimes I pulled out all-nighters, and what happened in those all-nighters is that... I crossed thresholds that my mind said I couldn't cross, and I crossed them. And that's the most mm-hmm. beautiful thing. One of the things that teaches your confidence or confidence and faith in yourself is going through those moments in life and says, I just proved my doubts wrong, and I crossed the threshold that my doubt created for me, and I crossed it. And then the natural thought is, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. And that natural, what else can I do, gives you this desire to go in any direction in life. So for us, in the Toltec tradition, you can say that I am the infinite possibility because I'm alive right now to go in any direction in life.
Mm-hmm. No, it's amazing. All right. And of course, you've got your own books, as we've talked about. I mean, you've got Master of Self. You've got Living a Life of Awareness. You've got the Five Levels of Attachment. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Little Book of Wisdom as well.
Yes.
And so a lot, obviously, under your own name, your own title. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Four Agreements kind of put the family on the map. Mm-hmm. And I know you've been teaching and working in that world as well. Now you're married, right?
Yes.
And you've got a couple of little kids.
Yes.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
10 and 12.
10 and 12. Okay. So we should hang out because mine's 14 and 11.
We're in the thick of it.
We're in the thick of it. And then, of course, you've got the fifth agreement as well.
That's my brother.
Oh, that's your brother. I'm sorry. Okay, but it's all part of the...
It happens all the time.
Right? It's all part of the family, the Ruiz family. But the four agreements, for those who don't know, number one being be impeccable with your word. Mm-hmm. Number two, don't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. Number three, don't make assumptions. And then number four, always do your best. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been married now?
Married 11 years, together 13.
Wow. And so 13 years together. And how often does she throw these four agreements into your face? Like, come on, Miguel, you know, man, look, right now you are not being impeccable with your word. I'm going to tell your dad. And right now, honey, you are making assumptions. And honey, you're not really doing your best. But don't take that personally. Yes. But, you know, so how does all that come into play? Well, it's got to come up sometimes, yeah?
You know, the funny thing is that I teach something called the four conditions.
Okay.
You know, it's like because that exactly what you're talking about happens not just within our family, but a lot of people around.
Sure.
And it's one of the problems that we face in the Toltec tradition is domestication. Actually, it's the main problem we face. The main problem that the Four Agreements tackles on is domestication, which is a system of reward and punishment by which we model the behavior of an individual. If you live up to the expectation, you get the reward. And if you don't live up to the expectation, you get the punishment. And since we are emotional beings, that reward feels like acceptance, which feels like love, and the punishment feels like rejection, with its end result being conditional love. Mm-hmm. So whenever we judge each other for not taking things personal or not making assumptions, we're domesticating each other with the four agreements in the corrupt tradition, which leads me to this point. My wife tells me, honey, you are my husband, not my teacher.
Mm. Yeah.
And that happens, you know. So for us, the four agreements is an instrument that informs my choice, but I'm the one making the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And part of loving yourself unconditionally is to willing to see yourself. So, hello, my name is Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., and I do take things personally. I do make assumptions. Sometimes I am not impeccable with my words. Sometimes I'm not skeptical at all. I butt like hook, line, and sinker, and sometimes I don't do my best. Just ask my wife. She's my witness.
Right.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So let me ask you this. Now, oftentimes people have challenges and they resist this whole idea of living the four agreements. Why why do you think we are so prone to find challenge with living these agreements?
Oh, well, for one, we do with the things we love to do. And if it's not something we want to do, then, of course, they won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time is that we're so used to domesticating each other that this is just another instrument that people can domesticate themselves with. And that's the corruption. They see it as the four conditions as opposed to the four agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point of view, then, you know, it's the same reason why I put my father's book down on the third chapter. It's my dad telling me what to do all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, when I graduated from college, when the bubble burst, because you're no longer working for grades, you're working for life.
Sure.
And relationships happen. And all of a sudden, I picked up the book again, and I read it again, and I saw it how other people saw it. It was an instrument that helped me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing, not just with the four agreements, but with any tradition. When we're not ready to receive it, we can't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But when we're ready, the message will come loud and clear. So we can never underestimate what the power of planting a seed is. Because you may plant a seed, and if that person is not ready, that seed won't blossom. But the moment the person is ready and that seed is still being remembered, and then you apply it and that seed blossoms, that's when that tradition comes alive.
Yeah, when the student is ready, the messenger appears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the messenger's been there all along.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the student finally listens.
Yeah.
It's like me with my grandmother. I listened to her. I listened to her because I loved her. Doesn't mean I believed her.
Mm.
And then life happens. I grew up, and all of a sudden, her lessons became more relevant with every year that passes. And all of a sudden, at the age of 40, 41, it's having a lot more impact than it was when I was 14.
It's interesting when you learn from lessons and you're not afraid to look at self-awareness and be willing to say, like you just did, I'm not impeccable with my word all the time. You start to see how many times that you put yourself in a scenario where, you want, it's that balancing act of you want to live in the now,
mm-hmm.
right? But you have these challenges where some of those challenges you want to push through, like mm-hmm. for the grade. Mm-hmm. Some of the challenges are there to learn to just let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost the balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is where, which one is it, am I not doing just because it's hard, but I need to push through? Mm-hmm. And which should I let go? Like, what does Toltec talk about that?
Mm. Well, for me, it's like when we stop pretending to be something we're not, it's when we start willing to listen. And that's when we see ourselves for who we are and all of a sudden realize that we always have a choice. So in that choice, you know, I had a teacher once teach me this, that the key to enlightenment is effort. And that's it. That's what all you need for enlightenment, to put the effort. Discipline, learning from that, is applying that effort every day, remembering to apply it. That's all discipline is, just remembering to move my foot forward or move my hand or create the thought, just a simple action.
Mm-hmm.
Then little by little, you realize that success is just following through. So the thing is, since I can go in any direction in life, where do I want to go? What do I want to create? You know, that's for me, it's like my hero, Tony Gwynn, who here is born and raised here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
The man.
The baseball player.
The baseball player,
yeah.
I love the man, but this is the guy who enjoyed practice. Mm-hmm. He enjoyed mm-hmm. practice and he went there. He was the first one to get there. He's the last one to leave. He worked and worked so that when the opportunity arose, mm-hmm. he get to enjoy it. You know, he lets his body. So in 1998, when he hit that home run in the World Series, he saw his opportunity. It's the World Series. He's in Yankee Stadium. I'm going for it. And he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the result of not just passion, but all the discipline he applied throughout his life. So when we're young, it's really hard for us to learn that lesson. But as we get older and we experience that, in order to get the things we want out of life, it requires our work. And it's not going to be anyone else's work. It's our own work. So what do I want to create?
With your experience with your ancestors and mm-hmm. your father and mm-hmm. not, you know, putting the book down.
Yeah.
How are you communicating to your children with having already lived that experience with a parent?
Well, I learned the lesson that the powerful lesson that my actions speak louder than my words.
Okay.
My words are empty symbols. They describe something. But the actions of how I live my life is what's going to be key. Eventually, my daughter and my son will ask me that question, what do I do? And my family, my wife grew up Mormon. I grew up Catholic, Toltec. And just in our tradition, we have a rich history. So me and my wife have found a way to share all our family's traditions as they come, as the individual who's our son and our daughter comes up. Because here's the thing about being a parent. We have no idea what we're doing.
Mm. Right?
We're doing the best with what we've got. So based on that, what's teaching us how to engage them, how to teach them is to know who they are. What do they like? What passions they enjoy? And then that's when we find out when the right lesson is appropriate because we know when and who they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mentioned Catholic Toltec?
Yeah.
Because I'm a Catholic.
Yeah.
Is the Toltec from a region, or I'm not sure what that part is?
It's from the Central Valley of Mexico.
Okay.
You can say as a civilization, they expanded there. And as time progressed, it just expanded throughout the oral traditions of all the other traditions. You can teach it here in Arizona, and mm-hmm. you find the ancestors there. But for us, you know, being from Mexico, we were mestizos. We are both the worlds of the natives as well as the Spanish, and we combine the fusion. Perfect example is La Virgen de Guadalupe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're going to have to do this. We're going to take another quick break
Sorry about that.
Yeah, all good. No, we're just going to have to take another quick break here on Reinvention Radio as we are talking to the one and only Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., and we'll be right back right after this.
were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulscher hanging out with Mary Valet. Hello, Mary Valet. Richie Ote, what's your baby? And the one and only Miguel Ruiz Jr.
is hanging out with us. Hello, hello, hello.
And, and if people want more information about you, they go to MiguelRuizJr.com. So that's MiguelRuizJr. com, and they can get more information there about you. All right, very cool. So, yeah, unfortunately, as it always does here, time just really does seem to fly by. So I want to make sure that we cover a couple of different things here in this last segment together. But one of the questions that I have is, look, you know, reality is, there's, as we said before, you know, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, obviously, being the son of someone who created something as massive as the Four Agreements, having sold over 5 million books worldwide, I mean, it's a huge phenomenon. And then, of course, in your own right, you've done, you know, a lot, right? And so on the surface, it looks like, man, this guy, you know, he's spiritual. He's got his shit together. And I mean, like, he really seems to just have it all. What's your biggest challenge right now? What do people not know about you? What keeps you up at night?
Well, it's like any parent, our children, you know, you can say that, you know, the for example. My daughter today just tells me that her class is going to have a Valentine's Day dance. So it's going to be the first dance where people can take dates. And I'm going, okay, that phase in my parenting has just started.
Right.
And also my son is high-functioning autistic. So, you know, any parent who has special needs has that, you know, the future looks great. But one of the things that I've learned, my son is one of my greatest teachers, is that, you know, when he got his diagnosis, I went to a good depression, a week-long depression.
I bet, sure.
But it was intense. It's the most, if I ever felt depression or sadness, that was the week, you know, the morning. And, you know, everything about autism is and that kind of thing. And then one day, a week after his initial diagnosis, I was sitting on a sofa in my living room just feeling sad and that emptiness. I've lost my son. That's the feeling I had. And then all of a sudden, my son walks up to me. He's 2 years old. Walks up to me, puts his hands on my knees, looks me square in the eyes, and smiles. And if you know anything about autism, that's a huge thing because he wasn't looking into the eyes. But here is my son looking at me as I'm going, what am I doing? What am I doing? My son is alive.
Yeah,
my son is here. And I realized that it's not, yes, his future might be great, but only because it's not going to follow the trajectory of other people. But he's the one who's going to write it. He's the one who's going to do it. And my job as a parent is to help him reach that, to be able to have that confidence in himself. And I realized that's the same thing with my daughter. I am there to help them have the confidence in themselves to make choices for themselves.
Yeah.
And as any parent, those kind of things sometimes worry me. But ultimately, that's what parenting is. You know, we do our very best to protect them. You know, that first year, we keep going over to the crib and pushing them and see if they move to see if they're still alive, right? As we get older, we take it a little bit for granted, but we're still worried. But we do our very best. And that lesson my son taught me is that what I was mourning is whatever attached image I had of him, of who he was going to be, and realized that I was already starting to domesticate him. But my son taught me that, no, he is alive. And while he's alive, anything is possible. Yeah. And it may look dramatically different than other kids. He might take he'll reach those milestones at different ages, but he will reach it. And my job as a father, and with helping my wife, because she's the main lead in this one,
sure,
is to help them love themselves. And to us, that's the point, you know, whether they do it with the Four Agreements, the Mormon tradition, the Jewish tradition, or Catholicism, we will use all of that,
yeah,
as well as the lessons that life teaches us in ABA to help them enjoy life.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because you penned the book, The Five Levels of Attachment, mm-hmm. right? And so obviously when we have a child, mm-hmm. we have a certain degree of attachment to what we hope that child will be. I have often said that having children is actually the scariest thing that I've ever done mm-hmm. in my life.
Yeah.
Because when that child comes out, you don't know what you're getting.
No.
I mean, it's an incredibly scary proposition. Mm-hmm. And from the standpoint of, and you know, don't get me wrong, of course, you're going to love your child no matter mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. afflictions it might have, but you could end up with a child that never walks. I mean, like, you mm-hmm. don't know. Talk about it in terms of, you know, what are the five levels of attachment? Obviously, trying to leave time here for us to go into some other things, but what are those levels, and then how did that apply for you sure. with your son?
I'll do my very best to do it sure. as fast as I can. An attachment is a healthy thing. It's how we engage someone. But what makes it unhealthy is that when the moment comes to detach, we can't do it, and that's what makes an attachment unhealthy. An attachment is to make something that's not a part of you a part of you by investing of yourself emotionally, intellectually, or energetically onto something. It's you're trying to keep time standing still. Mm-hmm. So the more attached we are, it's like the five levels quickly, the authentic self, preference, identity, internalization, and fanaticism. Each one of these levels represents how much we are attached to something. At level one, the authentic self, I know that I am a living being, regardless of what I know, regardless of what the knowledge I have, mm-hmm. I know I'm alive. Mm-hmm. At level two, I can go in any direction. That's why we call it preference. This is my preferred direction. At level three, identity, I begin to attach myself to something, and the best way to attach myself is to identify myself with it. I am part of this thing, and my identity, it describes my preference. At level four, internalization, I begin to use that identity as a model by which I domesticate myself, and which means I can begin to love myself conditionally and others, because I can't give what I do not have. Mm-hmm. To level five, fanaticism, where that belief is so powerful that it controls my will, it controls who I am. It's the thing that doesn't allow me to see my own humanity. It only sees the personification of an idea that I either agree with or disagree with. And when I lose the sight of humanity of someone, especially myself, I'm willing to kill and I'm willing to die. Mm-hmm. That's the danger of fanaticism, mm-hmm. that the word is more important than the experience or the humanity. So in regards to my children, you can say that in the moment of my depression with my son, what I was mourning is my attached image of that projection I had of who my son's going to be. Mm-hmm. And then when my son looked at me, he made me aware that it's not my job.
Yeah.
It's his. Mm-hmm. It's his job to say who he is going to be. And my job as a father is to help them, help mm-hmm. him and her, my daughter. Mm-hmm. Who they're going to become. And that was a tough lesson, but I'm grateful for that lesson because it changed my whole spectrum. And I'm able to apply that not just with my kids, but with my wife, with my mom in particular, my mom and my dad. Mm. And all of a sudden I realized that I've been domesticating people all across the board, including myself. So that's when these levels of attachments really started to kick in for me, that with teaching, seeing how I'm sharing what I have with my family. Because I'm the constant in every relationship. If I have conditional love for myself and attached beliefs, then that's all I have. But if I begin to see myself as I am and to accept, like for earlier, I do take things personal, I do make assumptions, mm-hmm. I stop pretending to be something I'm not for the sake of someone else's point of view, mm-hmm. that allows me to see myself as I am, which allows me to see my mom, who's sitting just outside, not as my mom,
yeah.
but as a woman who's doing her very best to live life at the age of 65 and enjoy her life, mm-hmm. doing her best to still raise three men and now grandchildren, and doing the best with what she's got, and also helping her mom who has Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
And see it from her point of view is to see the humanity. She is still a woman who's doing her best with what I've got. If I'm attached to the image of mom, I'll never see that woman.
Mm-hmm. So do you, yeah. Are you, you're still a student of your own work.
Yes.
That's basically inspired and handed down. Mm-hmm. Does it sometimes become a like carrying your own cross?
A burden.
A burden?
If I attach myself to that and if I try to live of it, like you can say that's the temptation. The temptation to believe the conditions that people try to impose upon me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To believe it, you know, like what do they say in the press? Don't never believe your hype or
yeah,
something.
Right?
Don't believe the hype.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't believe my own hype.
don't drink your own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm always be skeptical. You know, that's the gift of being the fifth agreement.
Mm-hmm.
To be skeptical is to hold back your yes and hold back your no.
But learn to listen, right?
And learn
humility.
To listen.
Yeah.
And the thing when we listen is that we get to reintroduce something that is lost, which is reason, our ability to give scrutiny to something.
Mm-hmm.
If it survives our scrutiny, then I'll say yes. If it doesn't survive my scrutiny, then I'll say no.
Mm-hmm.
Does my ego survive? No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that humility is there, and my humility teaches me so much.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to have to do this. Man, we could talk to you all day and night here, my friend.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you
yeah,
so much.
Great to meet you.
Awesome.
And so obviously we encourage people to check out the Fourth Agreement, of course, to check out your brother's book, The Fifth Agreement, and then your books, Master of Self, Living a Life of Awareness, The Five Levels of Attachment, and then The Little Book of Wisdom. If someone were to start with one book, certainly the Four Agreements, but if they were to start with one book of yours, where would you suggest they start?
The Five Levels of Attachment.
The Five Levels of Attachment.
Awesome. It's my firstborn.
Yeah, I got you. You always love that firstborn. All right,
yeah.
So Miguel Ruiz Jr., that's JR.com, MiguelRuiz, JR.com. And of course, you can grab Miguel's books. I mean, dang near everywhere where books are sold.
Yes.
So please make sure you check out his work. And, of course, check out the Four Agreements. And, man, just an honor and a privilege to have you join us here on Reinvention Radio. So for Mary Goulet and Richie Ote and Wei holding it down in the studio there. And for Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., I'm Steve Olscher.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you guys next time here on Reinvention Radio. Take care, everybody.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olscher, visit reinventionradio.com.